You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning, listeners. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, 855 AM. And you are joined today by myself, Jacob Andrewafa, as one of your presenters. And we're also now joined by our co-presenter, Zane Alcorn.
Top of the morning to you.
Oh, sorry, just had the microphone levels a bit low, but...
Top of the morning to you.
So before we start and before we announce what we have coming up on the program, I would like to acknowledge that 3CR and Green Left recognise that the show is being broadcasted from the land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung, the original rightful sovereign owners, storytellers and caretakers of the land. Australia was founded on the attempted genocide of the First People, and we recognise that this attempted genocide is ongoing. And as socialists, we pledge to actively support decolonisation. We stand with all First People in their struggle for justice and their right to land. So to kind of announce what we have coming up on the programme, so we have two interviews kind of booked for our programme this week, and we probably will spend quite a bit of time talking about the recent Isaac Herzog visit. In fact, that will be the subject of one of the interviews that we're going to be doing, because we're going to be speaking to Green Left journalist Isaac Nellis about and Socialist Alliance member about the Herzog visit, especially kind of capturing a bit of a perspective on, you know, the extreme scenes of police violence that we saw against protesters in Sydney on Monday. And then the first interview we'll be speaking to Mahmoud from the Kurdish Democratic House to talk about really kind of some of the latest developments that are happening in Syria and northern Syria, especially in relation to Rojava. We had covered that previously in a previous program earlier at the start of this year, so we're going to be going a bit into one of the kind of current kind of updates. And, but I guess maybe to kind of start off with a bit of headline kind of news. And I guess wonder if Zane had any news he sort of wanted to share. Or I might start a bit of discussion a bit on the Isaac Herzog protests that happened in Melbourne.
Yeah, well, probably before we get to the Herzog stuff, one of the things that's been in the media this week is the CFMEU again. I'm a CFMEU member myself and have been for over 10 years. There's been these wild allegations that the CFMEU cost taxpayers $15 billion, and it's been implied in a lot of the coverage that the CFMEU kind of somehow funneled $15 billion to organised crime, which is just a wild and ridiculous claim.
Wait, are they saying $15
billion? Yeah.
That's completely ridiculous. Like 50, it is. Does the organised crime within Australia even have access to assets that are worth $15
billion? Well, that's a very valid question. And apparently, so this is in Jeffrey Watson Special Counsel, who earned a reputation doing work for the Independent Commission Against Corruption in New South Wales, and who did some good work unearthing allegations of corruption against the then Liberal government and people receiving bribes. He was initially employed by the CFMEU to do an internal review into allegations of corruption when the coverage from the Fairfax 9 media first started. And he then was kind of seconded by the administrator once the administrator took over the CFMEU. Now, the problem there is that if you've committed a crime, whether it's, you know, whether you're guilty or not, whether it's a serious crime or a mild crime, there's this thing called client privilege, which is where you are able to have a frank and honest conversation with your lawyer, and your lawyer will not pass on what has been discussed to the police because they are there to represent you. So when Jeffrey Watson was first brought in, he interviewed a bunch of CFMEU people and was no doubt gave reassurances to them. I'm on your side, but you need to be honest with me and tell me what you've seen within the CFMEU and blah, blah, blah. And there's this thing called client privilege where the client, in this case CFMEU members, speaking to what was then their own lawyer, are able to speak in a frank and honest way. Now, this has parallels to Nicola Gobbo, who represented organised crime figures, but was also leaking information gathered under client privilege to the police. And it ended up unravelling some of the cases because you can't do that. It's not legal. Now, once the CFMEU was brought under administration, Jeffrey Watson sort of jumped ship to the administrator and was actually authorised, apparently, by the former National Secretary of the CFMEU to then take all of that information gathered under legal privilege and hand it over to admin. Anyway, there's currently a commission of inquiry into the CFMEU up in Queensland, and as part of that, they've compelled Jeffrey Watson to release this report, which he'd been putting together. And one of the things in the report, which was initially redacted, which was unredacted for this Queensland report, was this allegation that $15 billion had been that dodgy CFMEU agreements had cost the taxpayer an extra $15 billion here in Victoria. And Jeffrey Watson was interviewed earlier this week on the radio, and he was asked, that's a pretty wild number. And this is the thing, this $15 billion statistic was initially redacted out of that report by the head of administration, Mark Irving, because it's speculation. There's no basis for this number. And then Jeffrey Watson is on the radio and he's like, oh, well, I spoke to 11 different people in the construction industry and they all agreed that it was about $15 billion. So it's just a nonsense figure. And really the only way that you could come up with the savings of $15 billion would be to push CFMEU members off their union agreements and onto, if not the award wage for a construction worker is roughly half the rate that you get paid on a union agreement. There's a huge gap there. The award is rubbish, and anyone who's out there listening who gets paid award wages will know this. You can hardly afford rent these days if you're being paid award wages. And, I think the $15 billion figure is just nonsense. And I think what it really points to, and this has been a feature of admin, there have been some serious allegations of misconduct raised against CFMEU officials. But what admin wants to do is collectively punish all CFMEU members, 99.9% of whom have had no knowledge and have had no, they haven't partaken of any alleged wrongdoing. But admin wants to punish every CFMEU member and wants to attack wages and wants to attack the ability of the union to protect people's safety in what is quite a dangerous industry.
Yeah, well, kind of jump in a bit on this kind of discussion. I wanted to kind of take up how the kind of media has attempted to kind of frame this story. And what is quite clear to me is when you look at how the media has sort of framed this statistic. I mean, one interesting thing I'll just say about the $15 billion, I mean, it was reported that, I mean, the Premier of Victoria, Jacinta, Allen was sort of asked about it and kind of, she kind of dismissed it because there was actually no factual basis. So even a state government, you know, can't actually kind of substantiate this sort of claim. But of course, the media is sort of running along with it. And one of the things I sort of noticed about the framing is it almost kind of takes for granted that, you know, that the CFMU were engaged in some kind of wrongdoing. And one of the interesting things as well is it puts all this scrutiny on the CFMU. And obviously, at the end of the day, you know, there's been investigations about, you know, alleged misconduct of the CFMU. But you kind of notice about how the media frames these things is there's no scrutiny given towards the construction bosses, you know.
No.
It just seems to be taken for granted that construction bosses and the construction industry is doing everything legally. It's doing everything above board when we know that, you know, the construction industry is some of the actions of the bosses. I mean, what about all these kind of actions of the construction bosses to undermine wages, some of their alleged connections to organized crime? But also, what about the fact that the construction industry has made, you know, billions in profits, you know, off the back of exploitation of workers? You know, there's nothing to be, it just is taken for granted that the construction industry is like, oh, it's acted ethical the whole time, when the reality is we know that a lot of, you know, that some of the biggest grubs come from within the construction industry.
That's right. And there's a huge double standard here where there was allegations, it's probably nearly 10 years ago now, that Crown Casino in Melbourne had been kind of facilitating the laundering of money by organised crime syndicates. And there ended up being an inquiry, and they basically got a slap on the wrists, and there was a, you know, part of addressing it was a change of ownership. But one thing the government didn't do then and would never do to any private corporation is place a corporation under administration and give the administrator of that corporation the sort of dictatorial powers that the administrator of the CFMEU has got. Now, there's existing laws to investigate and prosecute corruption outside of admin. The police can investigate corruption and they can find you guilty of it and you can get sent to jail already. But admin has been brought in by the Albanese government because apparently the existing laws were not enough and we needed something stronger. Now, this double standard whereby the full power of the state is wielded against a workers' organisation in a way that would never be used against a corporation. Imagine if Crown Casino had been placed under administration. Imagine if the administrator had the power to sack management figures from Crown Casino and ban them from ever working in a management role ever again, which is the sort of power that admin has within the CFMEU. And the other thing is, admin is kind of got this carte blanche coverage against claims against it, which means that the administrator, including Jeffrey Watson, can publish defamatory claims about the CFMEU based on rumour and hearsay. And this would normally expose someone to the risk of being sued for defamation. But if Jeffrey Watson is sued for defamation because his report contains testimony that says, oh, well, there's rumours that this CFMEU official did this. I don't have any hard evidence of it, but there's rumours that they did this. Normally, someone who published unsubstantiated rumours like that would be at a very high risk of being done for defamation. If Jeffrey Watson gets done for defamation, the Commonwealth government picks up the tab because they've indemnified the everyone from admin against claims against them. So again, if Crown Casino or if that dodgy company that was awarded a contract to run Manus and Nauru and the operator of that pocketed huge profits and now lives in a $30 million super yacht off the coast of Bali, if some of these private corporations that have been accused of wrongdoing in recent history, if they were placed under admin, and if the administrator was given carte blanche to basically publish unsubstantiated rumours against them that would normally put them in the line for a plum defamation case, well, there's probably all sorts of dirty laundry within corporate Australia that would come out if you did to corporations what is being done to the CFMEU.
Yeah, I might have to finish up there because we'll go play a quick announcement. We've got to get our first interview on the line because I think they're a bit time limited. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the apartheid-free zone movement.
Organisation I work with, 3CR Community Radio, has been our partner for the last 45 years. They've always been a part of our struggle, particularly on Invasion Day. And today they're doing a whole day of broadcasting and programming around Invasion Day, as they usually do. For the last couple of decades, they've done that for us. I just want to acknowledge the 3CR mob.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And we are joined today by Mammut, who has been a regular guest on our program. And Mammut is a member of the Kurdish community and is part of the Kurdish Democratic Community Centre. And we have him on the program because we wanted to get a bit of an update on the current developments that are currently happening in Rojava. And maybe I'll kind of start off about Mammut by, can you tell us about, I guess, what's sort of been happening in Rojava, especially since this new agreement has been signed between, the Kurdish forces in northern Syria and the current kind of Syrian kind of government?
Good morning to everyone. Thanks for having me. I'm sure I'm driving at the same time, Stephanie. Not good communication. Sorry, I apologize for the internet. Look, I think probably most of your listeners know before all this happened, since 2012 or especially since 2015, at the Rojava, also east and northern Syria, the Kurds, they able to establish the grassroots democratic system with other ethnic and religious groups in the area. When civil war started in Syria, Kurds took a third way. They haven't supported the Assad dictatorship, and they haven't supported also radical jihadist groups. In their area, they're able to control, they're able to establish their own system. And then later they include many Arab tribes and all other ethnic groups. And it was the most peaceful, most democratic and secular area if you compare with other parts of Syria. But this system never been recognized by West. And militarily, there was a coalition between Kurdish forces and SDF, which is also made up by Arabs, to US-led coalition. And in terms of politics, there was Kurds never been recognized. And when Jolani came to power, and when USA and England they decided to support the Jolani regime, and also Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, we knew things is changing. Things is changing rapidly, but we never expect it's going to be this fast. We never expect West going to let down again because in this way, saying this, we never also trust any imperial powers because in Middle East, they don't really want a real solution. They don't really want people's power. They want their power to dominate, and we knew that. And then the early January, this Jordani forces attacked Aleppo city, where there is two major Kurdish provinces in the area, and hundreds of thousands of Kurds live there. And Kurdish forces had to retreat from there to avoid major civilian casualties. And then they backed by Turkey anyway, Turkish air power. And then they start to attack other areas, and some of the area where majority were Arabs, they also changed sides. They decided to work with the Jolani government. Saying this, the Jolani government now is changing his name to al-Shara again. The government is not elected or selected government at all. It's just appointed government and temporary government. And also, Syria doesn't have any constitution as well. Then, what happened in this situation? Kurds, they retreat Kurdish forces in Kurdish majority area, but there was a lot of casualties, and we still don't know how many civilians have been killed, how many people have been captured, and hundreds, thousands of Kurds living in Aleppo and other areas where majority of Arabs, they have to also forcibly moved from their area to come back in Kurdish majority areas. Now we have at least 200,000 internal Kurdish refugees living in town of Kobani. And also Kobani is a symbol town. It became a symbol by resisting against Islamic State attacks in 2014 and 15. And now 200,000 people moved in that town, and town surrounded by jihadist groups. Also, this is, I think, better to say that the important point, there is not only armed forces as promoted by America or other main media. There is many other jihadist groups. This is Jolani government, like coalition of extremist groups. And they surrounded Kobani. Kobani have now food shortage and medical shortage, and electricity wasn't there for almost 2 weeks. And it's cold, very cold there, and kids dying from this cold weather. And the other areas was Haseki and Kamishlo, which is populated by the Kurds, and also this very difficult life there now. In 30th of January, agreement has been signed, but this agreement is also a bit vague and not much clear. But on the other hand, we had at least 3-4 agreements before this with Jolani government, but they never implement any of them, and they just manipulate all these agreements, and we not trust them at all. And they may, if they see any opportunity, they militarily can attack these Kurdish areas again, and very difficult situation for the Kurds. So over the years, we sacrificed a lot, and we able to build a multicultural, grassroots, democratic system over there, but never been recognized. And this once more show, I think, everyone, and these imperial powers, they don't care about human rights, they don't care about human values, they only care about their own interests. And this, and now their interest to work with Jolani because he's a Sunni Muslim, and they want to, in American next plan to attack Iran or make less powerful the Shia groups. They want to use them against Shia groups. What is going to happen? They're going to conflict going to continue in Middle East. Shia, Sunni are going to kill each other, and they're going to be war between Syrian or Arabs or Iraqs or Iran. I mean, this is not the solution for the Middle East. And what USA wants, what England wants, what Turkey wants, this the war continue in Middle East and people kill each other and they rise nationalism and religious. But yeah, situation is not good at all. But we believe Kurds, we ourselves, we believe our own power and power of people who still believe human rights, democracy, justice, equality, and we continue to our struggle for our own values, our own survival, our own goals to Middle East to become a peaceful place for everyone. And yeah, I can't say this much on this point.
Yeah. So, Mahmoud, I know you are kind of short on time and you'll have to get to work soon. So maybe I'll just end with one last question, you know, why it's important to show solidarity with the Kurdish community in these kind of hard times, but also give us the details for the upcoming rally that will be happening tomorrow, organised by the Kurdish community in Melbourne.
Look, as I earlier also tried to point out, look, we Kurds, we want in Middle East all different ethnic groups, all different religious groups, whatever their backgrounds, to able to live together in peaceful and establish their own system. And not to be dependent of USA or England or these imperial powers. We think there is another way we can live. And another, what we're proposing, we believe, there is a communal way. We believe people of Middle East, they can live confederal with confederalism. They can come together. Every groups can able to run their own affairs. Every group, whether smaller or larger group, they can build. They can have decision about their own future. And our proposal is the democratic socialist system in Middle East. And but on the other hand, there's the jihadist groups, Al-Jolani government, and their radical religious groups. They don't have any alternative for Middle East. They, once they get enough power, they already massacred Alawis, Druze, and Kurds, and they will continue with these massacres, with this killing, with this war. Who will benefit from this? Warlords benefit. Who will benefit from this? USA benefit from this. England benefit from this. Germany benefit from this. There is nothing for benefit of people of Middle East. This is, therefore, it's really important. Are we want these radical religious groups or fundamentalist groups or nationalist groups to come in power in Middle East, another 100 years war, another 100 years of killing, or we want what Kurt purpose for Middle East? Every ethnic groups, every religious, they accept our differences, but able to live together, not put pressure or not on each other, have run their own affairs, and community in grassroots to have the power and not to be dependent of any imperialist power. This is our proposal. Therefore, it's very important. Anyone who believes human rights, who believes democracy, who believes socialism, to be with Kurds. Yes, this Saturday we're having a rally and 3 p.m. in front of State Library. But this is not only for Rojava this time, because this is 27th year of international conspiracy against Kurdish leader Abdullah Öcalan, who has been captured in by international plot, basically by CIA and Mossad, and handed over to Turkey in 15th of February 1999 when he was in Kenya. He forced when to go to Kenya. He went to Europe first to offer peaceful solution to world and get some support from European countries to Kurdish problem to be solved in terms of peaceful, meaningful negotiation. But unfortunately, Europe didn't accept this. In fact, when he went to Europe in 1998, many Greece MPs, they invited him. And when he went to Greece landed in Athens. Instead of MPs, there was a Greek intelligence agency's leader there was welcoming him. And then that time we saw this is international plot. This is not really, there is no way Europe going to support peaceful solution of Kurdish problems. And yeah, we protesting that international plot again and asking for freedom of Mr. Öcalan, who is also currently kind of negotiating with Turkish state, but saying this also we not to trust Turkish state, what they're doing in Syria. Jolani mainly supported by Turkey, and militarily, Turks air bombarding Kurdish area, and without the Turkish air power, Jolani can't do this much killing and massacres. But yeah, these two things, we're asking for freedom of Mr. Öcalan and once more condemning these international laws, and also we asking international powers or countries or Australian government to accept Rojava's autonomy or the statues. They write and they support them. They not leave them alone.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Mahmoud. And yeah, just to repeat for our listeners, the rally will be at 3 p.m. this Saturday at the State Library. And I'm aware that Mahmoud has, you have to get to work now. So yeah, thanks again for being on our program. Yeah,
thanks for doing that. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Have a nice day, Jake.
Okay, well, just we're just speaking to Mahmoud from the Kurdish Democratic House and part of the Kurdish community about some of the latest developments in Rojava. Now, I might go play a quick announcement, and actually, I thought we'll take a bit of a break and we'll play a bit of a song, but just play a quick announcement, and then we'll go into a bit more news, and then we'll have our second interview, live interview with the program. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
The media in this country, we as Indigenous people know, have censored our right of telling the truth. And the truth is what this country is most fearful of, in particular Indigenous truths. Until history is told by the vanquished lens, which is our people telling our story our way, and have the right to be able to incorporate that into a system of learning, well, people are always going to be denied that truth by deceit and lies. When you look at the type of psychological warfare and spiritual warfare that Aboriginal people are caught in, it's not just in the sense of military when they talk about weapons of mass destruction, but you're right, it's in terms of the media and the industry of media as a warfare against our people, and so is religion, I believe, in the Western sense. They're all weapons of mass destruction against our people.
We need to keep radical voices on air. Subscribe now.
Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 9419 8377.
Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio, and just another reminder that 3CR is currently going through its subscriber drive currently. So if you support 3CR and the work that we do on a regular basis, you know, bringing to you the stories from the marginalised and those that you don't hear in the corporate kind of press, we rely very generously on the support that we do receive from our supporters. So yeah, you can become a subscriber for as little as $40 a year, or $80 for wage, $150 if you're a band or organization, and $300 if you want to give a bit extra in solidarity. So I'll go play a quick song. I was going to play Sidelines by Phoebe Bridges, who is probably one of my favorite sort of artists. So yeah, hope listeners enjoy.
I'm not afraid of anything. 3CR, always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8.55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM, and you're just listening to Sidelines by Phoebe Bridges. But now we are joined for our second live interview for the program. We are very happy to be joined today by Isaac Nellis, who is a member of Social Alliance, but also a journalist for Green Left. And Green Left has been doing a lot of fantastic coverage on the whole protest movement against the visit of the Israeli President Isaac Herzog. We want to have a bit of a discussion with Isaac to talk a bit about the kind of grassroots kind of response to this, to Albanese's invitation to Herzog. Good morning, Isaac.
Good morning, Jacob. Thanks for having me.
I want to kind of start off, hear your kind of comments. We want to kind of hear a bit of about the kind of police violence that happened in the New South Wales sort of protests in Sydney. But I guess I want to kind of start off by asking you, can you give us a bit of your kind of comments on about really, you know, when you look at the kind of massive protests that happened in response to Isaac Herzog's visit, it's clear that Albanese in a way has egg on his face. Like the fact is, it's clearly backfired, this whole visit. We all mourned the senseless murder of people in Bondi Beach, but it's clear that this invitation to Herzog hasn't actually contributed to this any kind of social cohesion, and really the kind of response has showed overwhelmingly that people have rejected his invitation. And I guess I want to kind of hear, I guess, your bit of your analysis on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it's very clear, as you said, that Albanese should not have invited the Israeli president to visit. It underscores how close Labor's ties are to the state of Israel, which has been committing a genocide for more than 2.5 years. And there's this kind of claim that, you know, that Albanese and Labor's been putting around that they invited Herzog to, you know, generate solidarity with the Jewish community who were in mourning after the Bondi attack, and promote this kind of idea of social cohesion, bringing everyone together. But that's just a joke when, you know, inviting Herzog is probably one of the most divisive figures you could have thought of inviting, maybe only Benjamin Netanyahu, or maybe even Donald Trump, or someone like that, would be up there too. But Herzog, as a president of a state that's been committing a genocide, where we've been protesting that genocide every week, basically across the country, it's one of the most divisive things that could have been done. And I think, you know, the Zionist groups and the kind of right wing media and the coalition, in government, in opposition, you wanted to use this opportunity to kind of weaponize the tragedy at Bondi, which they were doing from the start, like soon, almost immediately. Even on the day of the Bondi attack, we saw, you know, the Pauline Hansons and the other right-wing figures using that attack to basically slander and claim that the Palestine Solidarity Movement was in somehow responsible, which is actually a completely disgusting lie. There's no connection between the Palestine movement and the tragedy at Bondi. They've seen this opportunity that they can kind of spin that line and attack the movement, which has been a very powerful movement with, you know, huge protests over the past 2.5 years, but also just very ongoing and lots of new people who are becoming kind of politicized by seeing what's happening in Gaza and seeing how our government's response was part of their calculation to use this invitation to Herzog as another way to kind of further attack the Palestine movement. But I think it's massively backfired for that, because if anything, it's actually reignited the Palestine movement. The huge numbers of protests that we saw on Monday, the National Day of Action, in some towns and cities, well, there was more. There was about 30 rallies in different cities and even small towns. And in a lot of those smaller towns, those were the biggest Palestine rallies they've ever had. And then they're also, you know, very big in the major cities as well. In particular, Sydney and Melbourne were about 30,000 or so each. And then there's been, you know, protests in the following days in many cities as well, particularly following the police violence, but also as kind of Herzog's visit has travelled to different cities, so it was Canberra, and then last night it was Melbourne. So and those protests have also been massive. So it's been a massive kind of... it's kind of reignited the movement in that way, and also, you know, revealed the extent to which the various, you know, state governments and federally as well are trying to crack down on the protests. So obviously the police violence that we saw in Sydney, and then there's also these kind of pushes to ban certain phrases like from the river to the sea in Queensland, and the globalizing intifada in a few states as well. And you can see that, like, people are not going to just let this happen. There's a lot of anger and a lot of people wanting to get out on the streets and protest genocide and also protest to keep our democratic rights.
Yeah, so now that's a good note to kind of end on, this question of our democratic rights. Can you give us a bit of an account of the kind of really extreme acts of police violence that we saw against protesters in Sydney on Monday, which I think a lot of people have been looking at it in Melbourne and have been, you know, very horrified. And in fact, I would actually say that probably the violence that happened by the police might have been, you know, one of the big reasons why the protest on Thursday was in Melbourne was so massive, which in fact it was almost as big, or actually possibly bigger or the same size as the protests that happened early in Melbourne on Monday.
Yeah, well, it was completely outrageous and over the top. I mean, yeah, as people have probably seen a lot of the videos, you know, the complete brutality of New South Wales police. But I guess just to wind it back a little bit, we've had these anti-protest laws put in place in New South Wales, particularly in Sydney, since Bondi, which, you know, in and of themselves are pretty outrageous and basically give the police powers to kind of ban protests, well, ban marches in huge parts of the city. So that's been ongoing. And despite that, we've been able to have quite a few protests in those banned zones. And in particular, the Invasion Day protest, which was absolutely massive in Sydney. The organisers were so committed to marching from Hyde Park to Victoria Park that they had to exclude Hyde Park from the restricted zone. That was a win against those anti-protest laws a few weeks ago. When Isaac Herzog visit coming up, it was again another... We knew it was going to be a big protest, but we knew that the police would be, you know, in there in huge numbers. And when we rocked up on the day, it was a massive police mobilisation. There was, like, cops everywhere. And, I mean, this has been the case at a few rallies this year in Sydney since we've had these anti-protest laws put in. But it was on another level. And as people started to gather in the Sydney Town Hall Square, you could kind of see that the police were kind of lining up around us, and they were flying. They had two police helicopters that were kind of flying low to kind of... over, like, try and drown out the speeches with the sound of the helicopters. And as the, like, town square, hall square filled up, the police kind of blocked off the entrances and exits so that even as more people were showing up, there was, like, several hundred, maybe even over 1,000 people who were kind of kept away from the main protest who were wanting to be let in. So you kind of, I was in the square, but I could hear. On the edge of the crowd, though, I was, like, chanting of people wanting to come into the main crowd and being boxed by police. And then, you know, so we were there, we heard speeches, including some very powerful speeches, including from former Australian of the Year, Grace Tame, and a bunch of activists involved in the movement. And eventually we decided, you know, well, the crowd really wanted to march, and, you know, there's no reason, really, other than these kind of outrageous laws, why we shouldn't. And we wanted to march to New South Wales Parliament, which is not a long way. We would have just marched there, had a few more chants and speeches there, and then we would have dispersed. It would have been a really good rally, would have shown our opposition to Herzog. But the police, for whatever reason, they decided that's not going to happen. So they, as we kind of started to head off towards that direction, they completely closed off the streets with, like, lines of officers. They had the police forces ready. And there was about a kind of a tense, like, half hour or so where we were kind of, like, looking for ways, oh, can we get through this police line? Can we march? You know, because that's our democratic right. But then, you know, obviously the police got given some instruction at some point to, you know, clear this crowd out. And so they just started attacking us. They started pulling people out of the crowd and arresting them pretty violently. You've seen some of those videos of people being shoved on the ground and, you know, punched and things like that. They started kind of spraying the OC spray into the crowd pretty indiscriminately. So, you know, a lot of people got hit directly in the face, but even a greater number of people just kind of breathing it in the air. Like, I would say hundreds, if not a thousand or so people would have been hit by that type of spray, including myself. And, you know, you can't breathe, your eyes are watering, you can't see. And in that, while people were dealing with being pepper sprayed, that's when the police kind of really started pushing in, shoving people back, telling us to disperse. But there was no way to disperse because we were totally kettled in on all sides by police. So if you wanted to go back the way they were pushing you, there was another line of police back there. So it was totally just designed to give them an excuse to be absolutely brutal with protesters. And we've seen the outcome of that is, you know, a woman with a broken back. There was a woman in her 80s who was hospitalized. There was children pepper sprayed. You know, vulnerable people pepper sprayed. A lot of people with bruises and injury, more minor injuries as well. I think there was 27 people arrested, and I think 10 of those have been charged. It was, you know, there's a lot of videos online. I definitely recommend people check out if they haven't seen them already. But, you know, there was things like there was a group of Muslim men who were praying on towards the side of the rally, and the police come in and just start grabbing people off the ground and shoving them around while they're praying, which is another outrageous attack. And it's definitely, like, I was kind of near the front watching kind of some of these arrests happening and with the rest of the crowd, and you could see there were targeting, like, majority of the people they were arresting were you know, people of colour or people with Middle Eastern backgrounds. There's definitely a kind of a racial element in terms of who they were targeting, which is, you know, not surprising from New South Wales Police. They've got a history of racism. So after that kind of initial attack from the police, a big group kind of managed to head towards Central Station, which is marching down George Street. So we ended up having a bit of a march down George Street, lots of chants of arrest Herzog and, you know, whose streets, our streets, and towards Central Station, where we finally managed to disperse. But, you know, you get there and you kind of, like, you've lost touch with the group of people you were with, your friends all got, like, mixed up in the crowd. So there's a lot of kind of worrying about, okay, hopefully my friends and the people that I'm marching with aren't, you know, haven't been arrested or haven't been bashed or whatever. So there's a lot of that post-rally kind of trying to make sure everyone, you know, who was there was safe. It was no surprise that the next day there was a protest at the police station that also had huge numbers, not quite the same numbers as the Monday, but another big rally against police violence. We're seeing, you know, reverberations of the outrage against that police violence across the country in other rallies, but also in civil society. There's a lot of anger at, you know, how the police treated peaceful protesters. Because I think it's important to remember that we've been marching basically every week for 2.5 years, and all of our protests have been peaceful. We've done marches through the city. You know, it's not like this crazy new idea. But this time the police just decided that, and, you know, with the backing and full support of New South Wales Labor and Premier Chris Minns, who should take the blame for this and should resign, that they decided this time they're going to, you know, crack heads and get violent. So it's all on them. And, you know, hopefully we don't see that kind of violence again, but, you know, it's hard to feel that you're safe from that. But, you know, we've just got to keep building the movement for justice against Palestine and stop the genocide, because that's obviously what the main call of the rally was about. But also we've got to, you know, campaign against this police violence as well, because it's disgusting, and it's, you know, part of this broader attack on our rights to protest and democratic rights that we're seeing across the country with new anti-protest laws and laws against, you know, protest slogans like "From the River to the Sea, Palestine will be free." So, I'll leave it there for now. Yeah.
Do you actually need to go? Are you in a bit of a rush, Isaac?
No, I'm good.
Okay. One question I had is this. Kind of authoritarian turn by the police comes in parallel to the rise of the far right in Australia and around the world. A lot of those police happen to be wearing Thomas Sewell-style moustaches, and we know from previous investigations that if you look at a Venn diagram between neo-Nazis and the cops, there's typically quite a lot of overlap. Can you comment on this kind of parallel rise of, you know, neo-Nazi organisations and the far right, the massive, you know, growth in support for One Nation, you know, Trump constantly spouting super racist rhetoric from the US, which then gets followed over here. Do you believe there's a link there?
Oh, I definitely think there's a link. I mean, I think the far right, you know, on the ground are so emboldened because those who are in power in, you know, Donald Trump's a good example, but also here, you know, even our Labor leadership in federally, the Albanese government, and particularly in the New South Wales context, like Chris Minns' Labor government are so quick to attack protesters and attack, you know, the left for standing up against genocide, but I think it gives the far right the space to go that extra level, extra step. And I mean, yeah, I don't think Facebook comments or social media comments are indicative of the general mood, but you do see with Green Left posts of these rally videos and stuff and the police violence, you do see a certain section of like trolls and right-wing kind of people on there who are celebrating this violence against protesters. And I think that comes from, you know, people, the Trumps of the world, who are, you know, encouraging violence against protesters and encouraging violence generally. I mean, you know, they're fully supporting and backing the genocide in Gaza, which is like the highest expression of violence you could imagine. So I think that they're very much emboldened by that. And I mean, the fact that this protest movement for Palestine has been, you know, championing people who are, you know, Middle Eastern background, people of colour, like there's the element of people who, the far right, who are hating Palestine protests because it's, you know, non-white people who are being protested for, and they see it as this kind of, you know, part of their kind of horrible conception of the world as these kind of racial divisions. And that the Palestine movement has actually been all about bringing people together, opposing racism of all forms, including anti-Semitism. I mean, there's huge numbers of anti-Zionist Jews who are joining the Palestine movement and rallies every week. And I think that that like solidarity that formed, that is coming from that movement is actually a threat to these far-right racist views that they're trying to propagate, and is a direct challenge to the their kind of anti-immigration, like white Australia kind of narrative. So I think that's part of the reason why they're so kind of opposed to the Palestine movement. And this, you know, you hear this idea a lot of, you know, why are we caring about, you know, an issue happening overseas when, you know, we should be caring about issues in Australia. And I mean, first of all, you don't see any of those people actually doing anything about any of the issues in Australia, such as the extreme inequality, things like that. But the other response to that is that Australia is directly involved in the genocide, in arming it, in giving it political support and economic support. I mean, we're still, Labor's refused to stop the weapons trade with Israel throughout this genocide. So there's a lot of reasons why we need to keep protesting. And, you know, the emboldening of the far right under One Nation is obviously a massive threat. And I think that the Palestine movement and other movements for justice, and a good example, another one would be the huge Invasion Day rallies. That's the kind of counterforce that's showing that, no, people do actually want a society where we look after each other, where we care about, you know, everyone's basic human rights, and we don't let anyone be kind of subjected to this horrible kind of othering and racism that One Nation and other far-right kind of groups represent. So, yeah, I think that's a good question to ask, because I think it's often left out of the kind of mainstream discussion around this kind of stuff.
Yeah, a sort of somewhat related thing, I guess, is the chairperson or spokesperson for the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, Alex Rivchen, came out in the media following the police brutality on Monday night and said that basically the use of the word intifada or globalised the intifada equals protesters calling for terrorism against Israel. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's this kind of ridiculous thing that's been going on for a long time now, where the media, particularly the kind of the right wing media, the other media will often just kind of repeat this, where they take slogans like, you know, globalize the intifada, which, you know, isn't even that frequently chanted at rallies, but you know, the term intifada. The term "from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," another chant, and they kind of say, this is calling for, this is an anti-Semitic chant calling for the, you know, extermination of Jews or something like that, which is, you know, totally not true and not the intent of those chants at all. So there's that, first of all, but they're also, like, for example, "from the river to the sea" is the chant that is calling for, you know, a peaceful, democratic society within the area from the river to the sea, so including both Jewish people and Palestinians. So it's actually kind of the opposite of what they're kind of claiming it is. And the real reason they want to crack down on those slogans is because they're, you know, pro-Palestine, Palestine solidarity, powerful chants that people say. So I don't really see their kind of targeting of certain chants actually going anywhere in terms of you know, stopping this movement, but I think they could you know, will give us creative ways to respond. But yeah, it's part of this broader narrative of trying to claim that the Palestine movement's anti-Semitic, which is just another lie that's been repeated continuously, and disproven very clearly by the fact that there's so many anti-Zionist Jewish people who are involved and have set up a whole bunch of different groups across the country who are heavily involved in organising the protests and building the movement. and also just by the rallies themselves, the speeches, the fact that, you know, anti-Semitism is always condemned, that, you know, there's been no kind of violence from the movement at all. But there's been a lot of good journalism research into these Zionist groups, and they do have close ties with other far-right organisations in Australia, and they also have close ties with the Liberal Party and with parts of the Labor Party as well. So, you know, while some of these kind of groups claim to just be, you know, we're just representing Australian Jews, they're actually representing the most, like, far-right, hardcore Zionist sections of that community. And obviously there's been, you know, sections of that community who have been radicalized against Palestine or throughout this process because of these really rich, well-funded Zionist groups. But there's also been huge sections of the Jewish community who have, you know, become anti-Zionist Jewish Jews throughout this, through seeing what Israel's been doing over the past 2.5 years. Because, I mean, it's just that the constant lie that any criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic, which is not the case, because, you know, Israel's a state. It's not representing all Jews worldwide. It's criticism of Israel is criticism of its policies, and it's a political criticism, not a racial criticism or a, you know, anti-Jewish criticism. So I think that's important to remember.
One other point that I'd be keen to get your comments on. So if you look back at the anti-Vietnam War movement, there are parallels there with the Palestine movement. It started out as a sort of fairly fringe thing. Then it started gaining a lot of traction. And once the Vietnam War protests started getting big, the police tried to stem this rising tide of public sentiment using sheer violence. And it didn't work. It just turned more of the public to supporting the cause and to seeing the violence of the police. And it seems like there's real parallels there. A majority of Australians are opposed to the genocide in Gaza, are opposed to Australian support for that, including weapons exports. And there's been massive rallies, as you've seen, we've been part of, and we've been covering here at 3CR. And it seems like Monday night was the state having a tantrum and trying to use raw violence to somehow push the thing back. And it's kind of counterproductive, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Like, we've seen these huge rallies, and I think one, I always point back to the Harbour Bridge March in August, which was kind of this flashpoint of 300,000 people marching across Harbour Bridge, and there were subsequent national rallies across the country that were huge as well. But those were, you know, if those 300,000 people, they're obviously not the same, not coming to every protest every week, because otherwise every protest would be that big. But that just showed that there's this broad layer of people in society who are, you know, have been following along and seeing what's happening and being outraged by what's happening in Gaza and the response of our people in government here and our complicity. And that was a flashpoint where everyone was kind of encouraged to come out and get to that protest, and it was absolutely huge. And then I think these rallies on Monday felt like another moment like that, where there was bringing in a lot of people who are saying, why the fuck are we inviting a genocidal president to come to visit Australia after everything that's happened? And so it came out for that rally, even if they hadn't been coming to the, you know, other rallies in the lead up type thing. But so I think knowing that's probably what the response is going to be from the general public, there's huge support for Palestine and condemnation of Israel, to smooth things over with their visitor, President Herzog. I can imagine that the Labor leadership and state governments wanting to try and keep those protests restrained. And I think that's why they didn't want us to march in Sydney. And
paid, so they paid tribute to the visiting emperor by giving them a beating. Mm.
You know, we know what this guy likes. He likes Palestine protesters getting attacked, so it's given some of that. I don't think it'll work to suppress the movement. I think it will, as you said, with Vietnam, it will just draw in more people who are outraged by the violence to then come out on the streets next time.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Isaac. Do you want to end on any kind of final comments? You probably said quite a lot already, but any kind of final comments you'd like to add before we finish up this interview?
I'll just say, make sure you're following your local Palestine group so that you can see when any upcoming rallies are happening. And Green Left also put up events on our calendar, greenleft.org.au/events, so you can kind of keep up to date with everything that's happening. There's definitely going to be more protests coming up, so make sure you get to them and bring your friends and family. That was one thing that Grace Tame said at the Sydney rally, was everyone here should go home from this rally and find five friends or family members or colleagues or whoever who you can convince to come to the next rally. And that's how we can build it bigger and bigger next time. So, thanks for having me and solidarity from Sydney.
Word. Cheers, Isaac.
Okay, thanks again, Isaac. All right, we're just speaking to Isaac Nellis. Actually, there's sort of a funny point speaking to Isaac, which I just realised, because we're talking about the protesting against Isaac Herzog, and then we're talking to a comrade who unfortunately has to share the same name.
Hashtag not all Isaacs.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to go play a quick announcement. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
This deal really accentuates and is very complementary to the White Australia domestic policy. Here you have not only a white alliance, but an Anglo-Saxon alliance of the ultimate cultural allies of the United States banding together, and the significance that it is aimed at colored peoples, at Asian peoples, at Pacific peoples. This is injecting a horrible racial dimension to this conflict. So I think the US and Australian elites' racist military policies are complementing the increasingly racist domestic policies. So I think, therefore, we really have to look out very, very carefully at this very dangerous synergy between racism on the military front and racism on the domestic front.
Subscribe to 3CR. Where else can you hear radical news, analysis, music, and opinions? Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 03 9419 8377.
Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and now it is time for the Green Left Activist Calendar, highlighting some of the upcoming events that are going to be happening in the activist scene. And some of these events can actually be viewed on the Green Left website at greenleft.org.au. Now, the first event I want to highlight is, I don't know, is there any, there's nothing listed for this Friday as far as I know, but going into, I guess, the Saturday events, there is going to be a protest in solidarity with the Kurdish community at 3 p.m. at the State Library, as we kind of brought up on the program earlier. There's also going to be a protest at 5 p.m. at the Ansell head office. Now, this is basically a protest against the company known as Ansell, and there's an ongoing kind of campaign that they have been utilizing slave labor in Malaysia. And in fact, it actually made quite a bit of the headlines. And you can actually read a bit more about this issue in the pages of Green Left. But yeah, I think this will be an important protest that's going to be happening at 5 p.m. Then there'll be a public forum, Grief to Action, which will be a public discussion with a number of Palestinians, and that's actually going to be all the way in Keysborough at 396 Greens Road. And you can get tickets for the event. You can get look at the listing for the event on the Green Left website at greenleft.org.au. Then on Tuesday, February the 17th, there's going to be a speaker, Say No to Extending the Security Patrols, and that's going to be at 5:45 p.m. at the Footscray Town Hall on Hyde Street in Footscray. And now one of the things about this protest is it's very much kind of protesting against this sort of increased push to, you know, increase to basically essentially criminalise homelessness in Footscray through the hiring of more security guards to essentially police homeless people. So I think, yeah, very important kind of campaign. Then on Wednesday, February the 18th, there'll be a National Day of Action, Keep Our Doors Open, at 12:30 p.m. at the Parliament House in Spring Street in Melbourne. That's going to be, to get a bit more information about this event, this is basically about preserving kind of access for neighbourhood houses. Basically, you know, neighbourhood houses are very much a big part of a lot of local council areas. They're very much part of, like, they're very much kind of public spaces in which, you know, members of the community generally kind of organise kind of like public events, etc. However, they're also facing rising costs, increasing community need, and they're not receiving the kind of core funding that they need. So I think this is very much demanding that the Victorian state government step in and urgently restore funding to historical levels for a 25% increase, allowing neighbourhood houses to continue providing communities with essential support and connection. So yeah, that'll be an important event. Another event that is happening on Wednesday, the 18th of February at 11 a.m. is there'll be a healthcare workers strike at Footscray outside Footscray Hospital. So that'll be happening at 11 a.m. Wednesday at the Footscray Memorial Garden, corner of Ballarat's Road and Mills Corner. So yeah, basically the Victorian government has billions for new hospitals, but only scraps for people working inside them. Enough is enough. On the opening day of the new Footscray Hospital, we need everyone out in support. So yeah, get to that protest on Wednesday, the 18th of November. Then there'll be another rally on the 18th of February, 18th of February, No Sunbury Waste Incinerator, and they'll be happening at 5 p.m. at the Parliament House. And then probably just the last event I'd like to highlight is there'll be the Belgrave Survival Day at 2 p.m. at Bill Borthwick Park at 65 Best Street in Belgrave. Now, are there any other events I might have missed, Zane, that you're sort of aware of?
Not that I can particularly think of at the moment. Yeah, it'd be good to see a decent turnout tomorrow to the to the rally in solidarity with the Kurdish-led secular democratic confederalist project in northern Syria. That's at 3 p.m. at the State Library.
Yeah. Well, I think, Zane, why don't we can probably play another song. So I thought we'll play maybe the last song we'll play for the program. I thought I'd play In the Flowers by Animal Collective.
All right. Before you do, tell us a bit about this song, Jacob, because I know that you've got...
Yeah.
Like, for listeners who don't know...
Yeah.
Jacob's actually quite an enthusiastic karaoke singer.
Now this is not really a song you sing in karaoke. So to tell you a bit about Animal Collective, so Animal Collective actually quite a kind of alternative, kind of neo psychedelic, experimental kind of pop band. They kind of a lot of their music very much echoes. If anyone has listened to Beach Boys, Pet Sounds. Now, Beach Boys, Pet Sounds was actually one of the most groundbreaking albums from the 1960s. And in fact, really, Brian Wilson was kind of like a sonic kind of genius in terms of production. So Animal Collective is very much a band that kind of follows in the kind of footsteps of Beach Boys, but is much more experimental, experiments with lots of different kind of production techniques, etc., and probably goes into much even deeper kind of psychedelic direction than where Beach Boys and even other psychedelic bands in the 1960s were sort of willing to go. In the Flowers is from their album Merryweather Pavilion. And
when was this released?
I think it was released in around 2009.
Yeah.
Around that time. So, yeah, Animal Collective actually have a whole range, have released albums up to 2023. A lot of their output is very highly acclaimed. So, yeah, I hope listeners enjoy. This is probably one of their more accessible tracks because some of their songs of Animal Collective are probably not that suited to play on radio. Some of them are like over 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 8 minutes, and they can be very abstract, but this is
better listen to when you've had some steak and mushrooms.
Yeah.
In the evening.
But this one is one of their more accessible, very much more poppy kind of songs. So yeah, hope listeners enjoy.
Gets wild to the beat, breath the rhythm.
All right, so I hope listeners enjoyed. That was In the Flowers by Animal Collective. So we're getting into the last part of the program. Probably I want to make, another plug, for the importance, of the subscriber drive that 3CR is currently running in this month in February. And, you know, you can become a subscriber by visiting the website, 3cr.org.au, alternatively, you can call 94198377. And I guess, Zane, did you want to kind of make a bit of a case for why you should be a subscriber of 3CR?
Well, because it's a member-driven organisation. If you don't subscribe, the wheels are going to fall off this bad boy. So we've got to keep it going with subs. It's the same with Green Left. It's the same with 3CR. Community media that publishes the perspectives, this point has been repeated over and over again, but once upon a time, public broadcasters, in particular the ABC, could be relied upon, even if not through their completely mainstream hourly news updates or whatever, could be relied upon to kind of give some fair hearing to, genuinely pro-worker, pro-environment perspectives. But these days, it's a lot less, the amount of platforming of Zionists that's happened on the ABC over the last 2 years, and uncritical platforming, is just ridiculous. So it's really important to have community radio like 3CR to get that alternative voice out there, because without it, we'd have even less media diversity than we've already got. And Australia's got one of the most concentrated media markets in the world. There's a real lack of diversity here. There's heaps of really toxic right-wing voices out there, and we're the little snake, sending little stabs of anti-venom out into the system, and we've got to remain vigorous. So yeah, please subscribe so that 3CR can keep going. And I don't know, they say radio's a bit old-fashioned. I don't think so. I listen to the radio quite often. I listen to 3CR quite often. And, of course, being the digital age, 3CR is not just a radio station, but it's a platform to get those cool podcasts out there. A lot of it gets syndicated through the Community Radio Network Australia-wide. So, yeah, it's a really important piece of the progressive left-wing infrastructure in Melbourne and across Australia. So please do subscribe to keep this good thing going.
Yeah. Well, we're getting into the last 2 minutes of our program. I like to actually give a bit of a thank you to all our listeners who've tuned in this week. I'd like to thank our guests for being on our program and contributing to some really important discussions that the left needs to kind of have, about supporting Kurdish solidarity, but also the left-wing kind of response to the Isaac Herzog kind of visit. I also like to make a bit of a plug that in terms of the activist calendar, you can look up all the kind of different events that we highlighted on the Green Left activist calendar at greenleft.org.au/events, and also make a bit of a plug to become a supporter of Green Left. And you can become also a supporter of Green Left for as little as $5 a month. And you can become a supporter by going on the greenleft.org.au/support. But yeah, thanks again.
Yeah, stick around for Left After Breakfast.
This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio. brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
If you like our work, become a supporter from $5 per month at greenleft.org.au/support or free call 1800 634 206.
Arise, you workers from your slumbers. Arise, you prisoners of want. For reason in revolt now thunders, and at last ends the age of Khan. Away with all your superstitions. Serve all masses.
Arise.
We'll change henceforth the old tradition and spurn the dust to win the prize. That's right, the commies are back. Reds underneath your beds in that crack.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.